The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
The decline of society and the lack of status and influence that we're feeling these days is maybe God's part. And so then oftentimes maybe the huge stumbling block where the church, instead of standing strong in our faith, takes on the viewpoint that, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And suddenly compromise creeps in.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the story of liberal Christianity. I mean, certainly in the United Kingdom, where the pastors lost a conviction about the authority and the sufficiency of the Bible, that then became apparent to the members of their congregation, who, if those people held true to the scriptures, would have to go and find some other place to worship. And those who were quite happy to compromise found they were part of an ever-diminishing company of individuals. And so the same is true if you go back to Scotland today. The church after church building is completely dark. There's a small number of people there, often very old people. And yet, if you go to Edinburgh, if you go to Aberdeen, if you go to Glasgow, if you go to some of the rural areas in Scotland, and you find they may not be huge congregations, but they're vibrant congregations, and they transcend all the age ranges, and you say, what is it that makes them strong in this context? And the answer is the same in every place, that they are convinced that the Word of God does the work of God by the power of the Spirit of God. And where that conviction remains, even though the numbers may not be dramatic, nevertheless, God is at work. And we're going to have to learn that here in America. I'm convinced of that. I'm not in any doubt about it at all.
And, you know, it raises the question. So often there's this sense that the world is looking for our approval, and they want us to simply capitulate and tell them where they're at, what they do, how they believe, how they act is okay. But in reality, isn't the real truth here that the world doesn't need our approval? What the world needs is our example.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what it needs is our gospel. It needs good news. I mean, it needs the story that is the great narrative that is missing. I mean, one of the obvious factors in our culture at the moment is the collapsing of any meaningful framework for understanding anything. Understanding where we came from, understanding why we exist, understanding where we're going. Looking at ourselves in the mirror and understanding sexuality, coming to an understanding of what it means to be a man or a woman, the nature of family, marriage. I mean, the things that are pressing in upon us challenge the very heartthrob of, if you like, a godly framework of existence. And the temptation, as you say, Craig, is either to curl up in a ball and wait for it all to pass, or to take arms against the sea of troubles and just become militant, and particularly in a political framework. But hopefully we're beginning to understand that the kingdom that we are seeking to advance and seek is not an earthly kingdom. As Jesus said, you know, if it was, then my followers would fight. The reason that they're not fighting is not because there isn't something to fight about, but because this is not the fight. And I think one of the opportunities that this climate creates is to find out who the people are that really have a conviction about the gospel. And I think it's Tozer who talked about, you know, when the heat is turned up, you find out who the chocolate soldiers are, because they will melt in the face of the battle. And so, here we go. Bad for the country, good for the church.
And yet, you know, it's interesting because this has presented quite a quandary and a distraction for many in the church who at one time felt confident to a degree in arguing the truth of the gospel. And instead, today we find ourselves in an ever-increasing environment where we're simply arguing whether or not truth exists, or can there be multiple truths coexisting at the same time. In the book, Alistair, you make a point inside the pages of Brave by Faith to indicate that the notion of Christianity and a Christian God is incompatible in a pluralistic worldview, and yet we live in an ever-increasingly pluralistic society where there are multiple truths, quote-unquote, residing side by side. Why is there such incompatibility with this notion?
Well, I just in listening to your question, I mean, we realized that once again, this is not a new circumstance. If you think about the Roman Empire, and if you think about the Pantheon, and you think about all the gods there, or if you take the Greek culture and Paul going among them and saying, you know, I can see that you're a very religious group of people because you've got all these different shrines and monuments and things, and I want to proclaim to you the one true and living God. That's exactly what we're going to have to say. And we have to remember that when we say that, truth is on our side, that God has set eternity in the hearts of all of our friends and our work colleagues, that they know, having been made in the image of God, that there is something more that extends beyond this life. They know equally that they're completely unprepared for whatever that may be. They are susceptible to the idea that the answer might be found in some form of Eastern mysticism or whatever else it is. And the reason for its attraction is in part because it allows you to live whatever way you want to live, while at the same time engaging in some kind of form of spirituality. Well, in actual fact, that is essentially Gnosticism, which is alive and well within the framework of contemporary Christianity here in America. If you think about it, the level of sexual incontinence amongst those who are professing Christian people is a travesty. It's a tragedy. It's absolutely wrong. And so the world looks on and says, well, I don't see why you would be concerned about this particular area of the issue when, after all, look at your lives. So it's a time, if you like, for judgment to begin at the house of God, so that we might then be organized and prepared to tackle the challenges and the opportunities that the moment provides.
And of course, in doing so, in capturing that moment, as you suggest, there is some degree to which, because of some of our outward behavior in recent times, there's almost the feeling that our testimony has been compromised. And oftentimes a Christian will react to that by kind of digging their heels in, and in doing so, creating a very combative environment that makes it ever increasingly difficult to try to live out our faith and reach others and make disciples for Christ. How do we go about, as even in Daniel had his challenges, in being able to engage in dialogue with authority, even authority with whom he significantly disagreed with, and still come out with a sense of that integrity, that testimony intact?
Well, it is a challenge, isn't it? I mean, when Paul writes to Titus, who's a pastor in Crete, you know, he says to them, you need to make sure that you remind your people to be good, that they should be keen to do good, that they should be seen to be good, that they need to realize that the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching them to say no to ungodliness and to say yes to the kind of lifestyle that would actually be attractive. I think you're right, Craig, that one of the reasons that people can justifiably push against us is because we perhaps have said we're very keen to make sure that we underpin the integrity of our message, but the integrity of the message has to be matched by the integrity of the messenger. And again, that's where Daniel is a wonderful example, because his conviction about the things of God meant that he was unprepared to compromise when he could have rationalized it. You're not allowed to pray for 30 days. Well, he could have said, well, what's 30 days in a lifetime? I mean, I'm sure God wouldn't mind if I just gave up for 30 days. But no, he says, no, if it matters, it matters. And that kind of understanding of the distinctive nature of what it means to belong to God is something that has, if you like, been leaking consistently over arguably the last, two or three decades within the framework of evangelical Christianity. And that's why I say I don't think this is a time for alarm as much as it is a time for assessment and to really look at where we are and how we want to go forward and how we want to help our children and our grandchildren who will outlive us in this journey.
And really then a matter of not just strengthening our faith, but also strengthening our conviction. And that takes us back full circle to the title of the book, Brave by Faith. Now, we often will hear, Alistair, pastors from the pulpit encouraging us to live by faith, walk by faith, engage our faith. But the book title, quite intentional, when you speak of Brave by Faith, kind of unpack that for us, if you would, please.
Well, if you think again of the way in which the exhortations of Scripture come, so when Paul exhorts Timothy, to preach the word, he says to him, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. So he's not just saying to him, come on now, man up, be strong, be brave. Now he's saying the way in which that will take place is in the Lord, in the provision that he makes for us. Because if we're honest, most of us are, all of us actually, are frail. We all like to be approved in the conversations that happen in our office or in our lab or whatever else it is. And we're fearful in this climate. Do you realize how hard it is to say something like, if you were born as a man, you will die as a man, no matter what you do to yourself in the interim? You say, wow, are you really going to say that? Well, actually, the person who wrote that most recently was a secular journalist in the UK. It wasn't a Christian. It wasn't the Archbishop of Canterbury. I'm not sure that he's brave enough to say that. And so when we talk about bravery, we're not talking about like pulling our socks up and trying to do our best, but we're acknowledging that God has put his treasure in old clay pots so that the power would be seen to belong to God and not to us. And so that's what we're trying to say, that the bravery is not something that we muster up, but rather that in the same way that we are saved by faith, so we are enabled to be brave by faith.
Do we also have to better embrace the notion, the old adage that we are in the world but not of the world? I'm struck by the fact that the subtitle to your new book, Brave by Faith, is God-sized confidence in a post-Christian world. Are there certain realities that the church is struggling with in terms of the environment around us that we need to do a better job at coming to accept and then acting on that faith?
Part of it is, I'm not sure that when you say come to accept, I would say, yeah, we have to acknowledge that. I'm not so sure we have to just keep accepting it. For example, we have members of our congregation who are involved in local school boards or who are involved on the boards of hospitals and things where significant questions are being raised and the groundswell is in an anti-Christian direction. And so I want as a pastor to try somehow or another and encourage my congregation to be prepared in those contexts to say, hey, wait a minute, that is not actually as factual as we are being led to believe. Or have you considered the possibility of the downside of this? And again, to do so in a way that is acknowledging the challenge, but at the same time not shirking the responsibility. But if you're not there, you can't bring your voice to bear. The idea that it's all going to be done politically from the top down is never worked that way. And the work of God has always been from the ground up, not from the top down. The conversion of Constantine in the 3rd century is one of the great questions of church history. Did it help or did it hinder? And we could debate that for a while, but it certainly changed everything, and suddenly it became kind of okay to be one of those Christians. Whereas for the first 250 years, if you were prepared to declare the claims of Jesus, and you were not prepared to include Jesus in the Roman pantheon, then they would probably either throw you to the lions or turn you upside down and stick you in the ground and set fire to you.
Yeah, rightfully so.
And so why is it that we believe, unlike our brothers and sisters in North Korea, or let's say in Albania, or in parts of sub-Saharan Africa, why is it that we believe that somehow or another as Americans, we get a free pass for everything. Everybody else does the suffering. Everybody else has to face the challenges. Everybody else goes to jail. Why? There's no logic to that at all. And that's not to say we don't rejoice in the freedoms that we've had. But it does say that if those freedoms are removed, then we will have to be prepared to be brave by faith.
A wake-up call, a call to renew our faith, to live, as Alistair Begg puts it, brave by faith. God-sized confidence in a post-Christian world. A new book, by the way, available at bookstores throughout the Bay Area. Of course, you can also order it online at truthforlife.org. That's truthforlife.org, newly published by The Good Book Company. Alistair Begg, thank you so much for the time and the insights.
Craig, thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. All the best to you.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.